Well, again, good morning, everyone. It's so good to be here and in the Word together again. Now, the scripture readings that I have today are a little bit curious, I think, in some ways. What you've heard in the kind of summary here is talk of Jesus' siblings. And so that's what I want to spend some time talking about today. I know it seems like a bit of an odd topic, but what we've been covering and what we looked at last week is how Jesus in the incarnation, how he enters into the full human experience. That he's born of a human mother, that he has a human father who he's raised by, that he's a part of the nuclear family unit, that he's like us in every way, in order that whatever Jesus experiences, whatever Jesus takes on, Jesus redeems. And what we know of human life is that we pretty much need to be redeemed from every aspect of it. Every little nook and cranny of what it means to be human has been infiltrated, impacted, and mired by sin. Think of a simple thing like food. Food is a good thing. Food is a necessary thing. Food is enjoyable. Do we agree? Seems simple enough. But food can cause problems, can't it? I was considering this over the last couple of days, how food has impacted my body for the last 6 months that I've been here, and how it's accumulating mass on my body. I enjoy fellowship with you, but you don't feed me very healthy things. Just last night, I was considering the fact that Rosalind, where is she? Over here. Rosalind made me this wonderful homemade apple pie one night. And then she brought out something I never even knew was a possibility. She brought out fresh homemade custard. And then she covered my apple pie in custard. After, and initially I covered it. She said, yes, just pour it on top. And so I did. And then she goes, oh no, that is not enough, Ryan. And she poured more on. I haven't stopped thinking about that night for some time. It blew my mind because that was some good apple pie. I love custard. So the combo was just incredible. But I can't continue to live that way, or I'm going to have to buy new clerical shirts. So here we have a simple thing like food, but the reality is we can abuse food, can't we? We can overdo it. I was joking with a friend of mine over the phone this week. He's going through a very, very difficult season of his life. And so we joked a little bit together about how we tend to eat our emotions when we're going through hard things. And I teased him a little bit going, what food would pair well with my current sorrows? And we joked about that, that you kind of, when you're going through a hard time, you're like, what am I craving? So we can turn a good thing now into a source of where we're trying to find life and comfort. And actually, we look to a simple thing like food to provide us with a momentary redemption. So here, all of these little things about the human life, because of sin, we can take a good thing and turn it into an ultimate thing, can't we? We can take a good thing and make an idol out of it. And we can find a good thing and find ourselves dependent upon it instead of upon our true source, the Creator. So the reason Jesus enters into all of these nooks and crannies is in order to save us from our abuses of them and to restore them to us as good gifts again. And so the reason I want to continue on in the same vein that we did last week, I know that these are not the easiest topics to discuss. We're talking about intimate parts of our past, our families, our journeys. Those are not the easiest things to unearth and unpack. But they're helpful because what we're understanding, what we're starting to see together as a community here, is where these things have actually shaped and formed us because of their brokenness. And Jesus wants to save us from those unhealthy impacts. So last week we looked at the relationship that we might have with our mothers and with our fathers. We looked how our mothers tend to define for us our identity, especially around whether or not we're worthy of intimacy. And our fathers, whether or not we're worthy of approval. And how we answer that can really define our identity, can shape and form our personality and who we are and how we live our lives. And so this week I've met with a couple of our growth groups, the men's group on Tuesday night, the women's group on Thursday, and then today at 2 o'clock we're actually going to do a special gathering at Eleanor's house, where it just gives me an opportunity to kind of talk with you, hear questions and answers, hear how you're processing this and the impact of this and what you're learning in this, but also how you're growing with Jesus in all of this. But as I've talked with you, I think what becomes this increasing theme is this recognition of where I didn't know we could rewrite this story. I thought I had to just try and get over my past. I thought I had to just try and overcome it by my own strength and will. What we're discovering in Jesus is that he actually does the work of rewriting, aren't we? And so as we continue to look at the family today, I wanted to look at Jesus' siblings because it's an important aspect. Now what we see in Matthew chapter 13, which is our first reading, is we hear the community of Nazareth is trying to make sense of Jesus. And so this is why we get this phrase. Is not Jesus' mother called Mary? Isn't he the carpenter's son? And are not his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? And are not all his sisters with us? So what we hear in their kind of complaint about Jesus is we actually get a picture of the fact that Jesus has a full-on family. We see that in the text. He has brothers who are listed by name. He has sisters who aren't. Now, in the Roman Catholic tradition, which holds to the perpetual virginity of Mary, how they understand these texts is that, at the very minimum, these are very close-knit cousins. Now, for me, it seems more clear of the text that these are speaking of biological brothers and sisters. And so what we see here, though, is that Jesus has family. And as brothers and sisters, as siblings, as we look at that, it's kind of this next step outward. We have the relationship with our parents, which forms our understanding of who we are and how we're valued and whether or not we're loved enough to be close to be known. But whether or not we have the approval of our authority and of our dad, the one who is outside of us. But our siblings are kind of our first community if you have them. Not everybody has siblings. Some people are only children. But what's supposed to be communicated here with siblings or with close cousins and friends is it's kind of this first step into community. The family unit. It's a mini society of peers now. We're starting to grow outwards. We're starting to have more relationships as we grow. And with that first community is questions of not only our value, but do I have a place here? And not only do I have a place, but do I contribute to this? Am I a respected equal member of this? But really, it's kind of our first core friendships. Questions of belonging. So here we have Jesus entering into that because it matters. And because those relationships have the power to speak to our value, to speak to how we understand ourselves. And so if you have positive experiences of that growing up, then it should create strong value, sense of value. It should create strong sense of self. You should go, I am enjoyed by other people. I am loved by other people. I do have a place. I am a part of something. That's what it should communicate, shouldn't it? But as we all know, especially in school and in families, those peer relationships can be a negative impact, can't they? My girls and I last night, we watched a movie for the first time that the girls had never seen. We watched the movie E.T. And my girls were too young, they hadn't seen that. I think it came out 1983. And it's known as one of the top 20 movies of all time. But as we're watching it, you know, the thing I love about those kind of 80s movies, and Spielberg does this so great, is that kind of that group of kids riding their bikes around town. You know, just kind of that old school, the way we grew up. I love watching, they're very nostalgic, aren't they, those kind of movies. You know, one of my favorite movies of all time is The Sandlot. You ever seen that movie? Right, so the group of boys, it's the 50s, you know, kind of idealistic Americana. I love that. Playing baseball and running from big scary dogs and having crushes for the first time. I love that stuff. But what you see in those stories too is that both that finding a place, finding belonging, being a part of something bigger than yourself, but also, if there's a sense of rejection there, I think that's why Sandlot appeals to so many young boys, is because you have the story, if you're not familiar with it, is there's this group of kids that gather every day just about through the summer, and they play baseball. And this new kid moves to town, and he's a bit of a loner. You know, he lost his dad, we don't know why in the story, so he doesn't really have his dad in the picture. He doesn't have a good ball glove. He doesn't know how to play catch. And here he comes to this group of boys who are great at it. Like, they play ball well, don't they, in that movie? And so here's this outsider kid. And you can see as the movie kind of progresses, you're going, he feels like, oh, I'm such a dork. You know, and he kind of hates himself for it. At one point, he like yells at himself because he can't catch the ball. He's like, what is wrong with you? And he's all, you know, disappointed. He starts to hate who he is because he doesn't feel like he fits in the group. It's actually a really great story to show some of this. Right? Same can be true for girls in their stories. Is this going, we have this big question hanging over us. Do I belong here? Am I accepted? Am I part of this? And based on how the group responds can make you answer that question that sets who you are for the rest of your life. So you can grow up then going, based on your experience, if it's a bad experience, going, I don't belong. I don't get to have friends. I'm better off alone. It's very easy as a child grows up to believe those things. What's great about the Sandlot story is they actually take him in and they help him be a part of the community. They teach him to play ball. They get him a proper baseball hat. They get him a proper glove. And it's this great coming-of-age story in that picture. But that's not always the case for all of us, is it? What we see from the other texts here in the New Testament about Jesus is that he's not actually accepted by his brothers and sisters. What we see in Mark chapter 3, verses 21, it says, what happens in Mark 3? Jesus just chooses his 12 apostles. And so he's coming into this big public ministry. He's got the attention of everybody. And after announcing his 12 disciples, he goes home for dinner. This is a really normal event here. He goes home for dinner, it says, verse 20. In chapter 3, he went home, and the crowd gathered again. So now the crowd comes and gathers around his house, and they want to keep hearing him. They want him to keep teaching. And there's so much commotion that the family can't eat their normal evening dinner. So imagine Jesus kind of sitting around at home with siblings. He's the eldest. So he's an adult at this point. He's in his 30s. And he's sitting around, their whole family's gathered around, and they're trying to eat dinner and they can't because the crowd wants to hear Jesus teach. So they get so frustrated that their dinner is being interrupted. It's like me growing up when my girlfriends would call during dinner time. My dad did not like that. It's not quite the same as this. I didn't have a crowd of girlfriends. But the family gets so frustrated. Verse 21, when his family heard it, they went out to take Jesus from the crowd and were saying he's out of his mind. So they reject Jesus. We see it again in John chapter 7, verse 5. It says, not even his brothers believed in him. So here we have this first kind of steps, that close-knit community. And instead of them speaking the truth, instead of them believing in Jesus and who he is and in his value and in his call on his life and in what the Father had made him for, they reject all of these things. We don't know why. It doesn't say a lot about that. His brother James later, after the ascension, comes to believe in Jesus. But this kind of captures a little window into what it's like, though, is that those who are meant to be closest to you can reject you, cannot speak value over you, cannot receive you, love you, and enjoy you. And let's be honest, when it comes to siblings, if you grew up with siblings, they can be some of the worst. They can. Now, I'm an oldest. I'm the oldest of four. And as I look back on just the amount of times that I was cruel, that I was frustrated, I mean, a house of three boys, we can be violent. My youngest brother, we would often, our favorite thing to do was to make him wear every item of clothing in his dresser at once. So we pile on layers, okay, until he was like, you know, big legs, and his pants couldn't pull up, and he'd walk around like this. So we put him in all of his clothes, and then we'd put him in front of a hockey net or a wall or whatever, and we'd shoot balls at him. And the goal was not actually to get the ball in the net. The goal was to hit our brother, but to reduce the damage so we wouldn't get into too much trouble. So this is me and my brother Tony. This was our favorite thing in the world, was to do this to Miles. And we would do the same thing. We had a trampoline growing up, and we would stuff pillows up in his shirt. And then he would bounce on the trampoline, and we'd tackle him. So needless to say, my brother Miles, who you'll get to meet someday, he's a tough kid. But you start to realize when you think back and you're like, it was all fun and games. But then if I ask Miles, how did our upbringing together, how did it impact you? You know, then you start to unearth the fact that he was willing to do all those things because he wanted to feel like he belonged with us. Because he wanted to feel like he was loved by us. Because he wanted a place with us. So he was willing to be hurt in order just to be a part. He was willing. So when you actually look at the heart, there's a lot of things going on inside of him, isn't there? He's answering a lot of questions that go, in order to be loved and accepted by my brothers, I have to do these things. I have to be less. I have to be willing to be exploited a bit. That's not full value, is it, of him? So as we were adults, I realized we would start to do these things to him still. And I realized that he would start to think that he had to do it in order to be a part of us. So it's all fun, right? It's fun, we think. But then when we realize, oh no, it actually was communicating something. And he was believing something about his value. And then he goes and lives his life that way. Willing to be in relationships that he's not loved in. Willing to do those things in order to try and find belonging. So then he becomes 12 and 14, and he's the life of the party, but at the expense of his own soul. These are the kinds of normal things that happen in homes, because the temptation based on these relationships, so the same as with mothers and fathers and now with siblings and with friends and with cousins, is to believe lies about who we, about our value, about who we are based on the function of that relationship. And we can believe that we're less valuable, all the while the creator of all things, our heavenly Father, is saying, you're so valuable, I'll come and die to save you. I love you, and I'll fight for you, and I'll come for you, and I'll provide for you. And all the while we are falling victim to the temptations of living in a fallen world to believe something less. So for many of us, those beliefs look like believing the lie that we have to earn relationships, that we have to achieve friendship, that we have to strive to be a part of community. But as time goes on and as you get older, you lose your motivation for that, don't you? If you've been living that way of going, I got to try and get friends, you eventually get worn out and you're like, oh, forget it. I'm sick of that. Because when you're earning it, you never feel like you have it. So then the temptation becomes that it's impossible. To believe that it's impossible. And so we harden our heart and we say, I don't need friendship. I don't need relationship. It's not worth the risk of being vulnerable again. And we close in and we say, it's not possible and it's not worth the effort and I don't want to do it anymore. And that can happen through failed friendships, can't it? That can happen from a growth group gone wrong. That can happen from bad experiences of friendship within churches. That can happen from a church split. But these experiences that take place in our life, all of a sudden, are writing on our hearts a list of beliefs that are forming and shaping and changing us, and those beliefs don't fit with Jesus, do they? And so this is what I'm pushing at for us as a church, is to be aware of what do we really believe deep down. And do we really believe in Jesus? Because I can live my life in friendships and relationships based on beliefs formed out of my experience instead of based on my beliefs out of the gospel of Jesus. Does that make sense? And so the goal today is to become aware what is those lifts, that list of beliefs that I form based on friendships, based on siblings, based on peer relationships in the past that have broken, shut down, and closed up my heart to real community. That's not an easy question, I know that. But the reason we harden our hearts is because we don't want to have broken hearts. That's the reality. And so the gospel of Jesus that we're hearing today is that he is safe enough to mend our broken hearts and to be to us the friend that we've always longed for. To be to us the friend that we always needed to have and couldn't find. And not only to be the individual friend to our hearts that we've always wanted, but to create a community that we thought was impossible to experience. And I saw that this week. I saw small group gatherings of vulnerability, of honesty, of open-heartedness, willing to be known and to know one another. We are not a church that just plays church. We are a true, honest community. That means we have soft hearts towards one another. Now, the goal of these small groups is that we need a sense of confidentiality. But one of the things that I want to tell you, what I experienced on Tuesday night, I said this actually to Bishop Trevor, and I said this to my wife, I said that was one of the most meaningful experiences of my ministry. It was a group of older, strong, healthy men who were willing to also be vulnerable and to be soft and to have true spiritual friendship. I saw the same thing in our women's group. I see the same thing every time I have tea or lunch with you. That's who we are as a community. It's because we're in the greater context of being in Jesus. Because we're building communities on the cornerstone. This is a safe place to be known, to be vulnerable, to be honest. Because this is a place to be loved, to be valued, to be cared for, to be protected, to be enjoyed. That's who we are as a people in Jesus. And so wherever we haven't had, where we've had experiences of the opposite, that's what we're going to bring to the table today. So where have we experienced broken friendship? Where have we experienced rejection in relationship? Where have we been hurt by those we were vulnerable with in the past? Where are our hearts broken? Today, that's what we bring to the table. And what we take away from the table is the promise of Jesus. The promise to say he can make a good community. He can make a safe community. He can make a place where our hearts can be known, but will be protected and will be cared for. And we're doing this today. We're making this decision based on our faith in Jesus. Not our faith in man, but based on our faith in Jesus. Do we believe that Jesus can make this church that? Do we believe that Jesus can be safe enough for us to do that? Do we believe that Jesus is good enough to mend our broken experiences, even in this church? That's the core question. Do we believe Jesus is good enough to entrust our hearts to him? In order to be in community with him. What we see of Jesus is that even though his siblings didn't believe in him, he still goes on to choose the 12 apostles and to live in a tight-knit community. The joke of my generation, it's on the internet a lot, is people say the biggest miracle we see of Jesus' life is that he was a man in his 30s with a group of friends. That's the joke of my generation about Jesus. The greatest miracle about Jesus isn't his death or his resurrection. The greatest miracle of Jesus is that he could be an adult with friends. And we see him not only able to do that, but to set a miraculous standard for us that we get to enjoy in the church as we move forward together. So I realize the great risk of today. I realize that. Jackie and I, we're grieving the fact that we've had to say goodbye to a lot of meaningful friendships in order to be here. And there's a temptation in that for us too to go, maybe we shouldn't risk our hearts again with you. Maybe we should hold back. We don't want to ever have to say goodbye. We understand the risk as much as you do. But Jesus compels us, doesn't he? Jesus compels Jackie and I to put our hearts out there for you. And Jesus compels you to put your hearts out to one another again. But isn't that what we want? To say, one of the greatest miracles we've seen in this church is not only our own healing, but also that we enjoy tight-knit, Jesus-defined friendships. Let's pray together. So, Heavenly Father, we hear you beckoning us to offer to you our broken hearts today. Broken by friendship, broken by community, broken by siblings, where we were meant to find safety, to find value, to find love, to find camaraderie, where we have found rejection, where we have found pain, where we have found loneliness. Jesus, we allow our hearts to be known by you today. That you would come and care for every scratch and every break. That you would come and hold every tear and all of our heartache. Jesus, we receive you to come near to these deep places within us. And would you lead us to healing, to redemption, and to an exchange today at your table.